So I want to continue my is this on? Want to continue the discussion of yesterday, basically connecting non-critical strings to geometry, complex geometry, and so more precisely to these topological strings of B-type. And so let me say first a few words about and so relating to matrix models, and then I want to kind of extend this to more complex, more involved geometrical cases. So first some remark about the brains in the system. So we have some Calabi-Yau threefold X, and then we want to put brains there, and the brains first will be this kind of these B brains, which will be kind of holomorphic. Of not necessarily, but holomorphic curves. So here we have some curve B sitting there. And so it will be have one complex dimension or two real dimensions. That's typically the case. So it's, if you wish, a Euclidean D1 brain. And the first thing that you can do is kind of try to write down the at least the semi-classical action for such a brain. So what do you get? So the world volume theory will have an action which is usually viewed as a reduction down to two dimensions of holomorphic Chern-Simon theory, which in this case means that you have a two-dimensional theory. So you have the brain has kind of two normal directions, kind of phi, let's call them phi 0, phi 1, and it has a kind of a world volume coordinate z, a complex coordinate z. And so its action will be d squared z trace phi 0 d bar phi 1, where this is, so there's also be a gauge field, so there will be d bar will be dz bar plus the commutator with some gauge holomorphic or connection az bar. And if you have n of these brains, then phi 0 and phi 1 will be n by n matrices. And their spin, if you wish, depends on the normal directions, in particular the normal bundle. So one way to derive this action, by the way, is to take the brain and deform it. So see what happens if you deform it to another brain, B prime, and think of kind of phi 0 and phi 1. Say, think of these phi i's as functions of z and z bar. So you deform it in a non-holomorphic fashion. And then you make a, there's a three cycle connecting them, so C3 here, and then you integrate over C3 the holomorphic three form. So in local coordinates, we can write omega as dz wedge d phi 0 wedge d phi 1. And then if you integrate this, you will find actually that this reduces to d squared z phi 0 d bar phi 1. In particular, this is 0 if the deformation is holomorphic, which is also what you want. So in this sense, you end up with this matrix model. So, sorry? Okay, this will actually be quite important because this will have to do that the action of the brain as a function, say, of its position, for instance, could have monodromy. And this will be kind of the theme of this lecture in some sense, so I will connect to that. So this is just a local description. Sorry? Why they labeled them 0, 1? Oh, okay, no, not yet. So let me now come to the case, which is the interesting case, is if you, so the simplest case is the case where you have, your brain is a one sphere. Well, in some sense, you can think of it, have like take the case which kind of has n equals 2 supersymmetry, like think of a P1 inside K3, or another way to think of that is, think of the usual orbifold quotient, C2 mod C, and blow it up. So blow up to what's, you get this line bundle O minus 2 over P1. And then think of this sitting in a Calabi-Yau, just so take cross another trivial factor of C. So in that case, the fields phi 0 and phi 1 will correspond to these two directions. So phi 1 will be this one over here, and phi 0 will be clearly related to this trivial factor. And so then they will have world sheet spins 0 and 1. So what you're getting is in a chiral conformal field theory, a gauged chiral conformal field theory, now this is a theory which in some sense is quite easy to solve. If you wish, you can kind of integrate out the gauge field, then you find that phi 0 and phi 1 commute, and then you can, if you wish, integrate out phi 1, and then you get a constraint. So if you integrate out phi 1, you get a constraint that d bar on phi 0 is 0, but phi 0 is a scalar on this compact two-sphere. So in that you find that phi 0, say, as a function of z and z bar, is a constant, which you can then call, say, a capital phi, and that will be an n by n matrix, so no longer a field. So this will be just a matrix. Yes? Well, it's conformal in the sense it depends only on the complex structure. These are B-brains. So the world volume theory will be depend only on the complex structure. It's sorry? Well, I'm okay. It's only something which depends on not. I'm just saying this doesn't depend on the scale of the metric that you put on your Riemann surface. Right. Yes. So this has so this is a very simple model. It gets an integral of phi 0. So how do you get a matrix model out? Well, you change the geometry. So in particular, you make the normal bundle such that instead of having this family, so here we had this kind of P1, but you could smoothly deform it. It was a one-parameter family. And now we want to somehow have a situation where there are, so we have a modulus. So now we have, say, want to have n kind of isolated curves. And there are various ways to do that. So one way to think about it is if you cut the two-sphere in two halves, so here we have our fields phi 0, phi 1. So let's call them phi 0 tilde, phi 1 tilde. On the other patch, here we have a local coordinate z. Here you have a local coordinate z tilde. And so z tilde is, as always, related to z by 1 over z. Phi 0 is a scalar, so it will transform like this. And phi 1 is a one-form, so it will transform like this. But now you can kind of change the geometry in a nonlinear way by making this coordinate patch in this way, where W prime has n zero, has n zeros. So you see easily that this will be kind of a fixed. If W prime is zero, this thing is kind of fixed. So there are no deformations for phi zero. And so this changes the geometry. And one way to see how this geometry changes, just think of this. These are six variables with some set of relations. So you can try to write down the coordinates, say the complex structure of the manifold, which is parameterized by these things, and you easily find that you can pick. In the end, this is a threefold, and it's a threefold given by the equation. So this is kind of the singular limit of the manifolds I have been discussing. So how does this lead to a matrix model? Well, one nice way to think about this is what we did here. We had some nonlinear way to patch the coordinates. Sorry? Sorry? Sorry?
You have phi 1 tilde. It was a one form of P1.
Right, so now I'm changing the transformation.
Added this term to the transformation.
Yeah, so let's now change the normal bundle in this way. So I have the usual normal bundles on these two.
Some kind of affine bundle.
Precisely. Yeah, so for instance, this would be an nth order polynomial.
Right. So you can introduce that.
just do that. No. So now what you say is, so this represents some geometry which has in particular a complex structure. So let's look at the ring of functions on this manifold.
Oh, you just want to look at the coordinates.
Yeah. So the total space of this bundle over, so I have two patches.
The total space of the new affine.
Right. Yeah, so I have a manifold here with three coordinates. I glue it to a manifold here with three coordinates.
So the phi's are not matrices now.
No, just one by one, yes. Yes. And my claim is, I can give the formulas, but or I can introduce variables u, v, x, and y, where x is actually phi 0, but u, v, and y are some combinations of the phi 1s and the z's and the z tildes, so that they satisfy this relation. So that means that this manifold that you get is, so the picture should have in mind, this is some singular manifold, so looks like this. And if you... This is a singular manifold. And what we have kind of done, we kind of have these singularities and we have resolved the singularity. So we have some manifold which is a bit difficult to draw. So there is a resolution where this is a manifold which has n isolated holomorphic spheres sitting in it. Now, how does this lead to a matrix model? Well, you just have to think about how do you patch the two coordinates on the top and the bottom. Well, you can, in a kind of an operator formalism, the partition function of this theory would be kind of, well, the vacuum on one side, the vacuum on the other side. And then there would be an operator that implements that coordinate transformation. But remember that phi 1 and phi 0 are canonically conjugate. So if phi 1 should transform in this way, you can easily see that that's implemented by putting here the operator trace w of phi 0. So if I just act for that operator on the state, that's, so this just represents for me the state in that theory corresponding to the half sphere. This corresponds to me to the other half sphere. And this is, in the operator formalism, this just implements for me the transformation. Why? Because if I think of the field phi 1 tilde which is living here, I have to conjugate it through this. But phi 1 is canonically conjugated to phi 0. So I get an extra term, which is w prime of phi 0, which is over here. So on the other hand, we know that this path integral reduces to the zero mode of phi 0. So in the end, this just then reduces to, and there is a 1 over g string here. 1 over g string. This would also be a 1 over g string, of course, in this action, because it's the D brain action. And then you get here, well, in the matrix case, trace of phi 0. Yes, yes. So this is the derivation indeed for a single brain. And now I just take this action and lift it to. I do it on the. No. I do it on the. So kind of on the. Well, no, precisely not, because this phi 0, if you wish, there are singularities because of this change in the transformation properties.
But I thought the state was the disk.
Sorry?
I thought the state was just the disk, the half sphere.
Yes.
What happens when you deform? There are no operator insertions on your half sphere.
Right.
So what happens when you deform that contour towards the right?
Well, as I said, in this theory on this sphere, there's still a zero mode phi zero. So it's just.
Is it a comparable theory? I mean, you seem to be using the problem
to comparable theory. I'm not saying this. I just have this path integral over phi zero. It reduces, if you wish, the action here reduces just to an integral over the zero mode. So instead of integrating over the zero mode of phi zero, now integrate with this weight. It's not annihilated anyway. No, so please do not think of phi as, I'm not saying to you, you should think of phi to the n in the free boson language that you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know even what this means.
The action, the one you started with, so
yes.
You can't be treated with that action. Yeah. I mean, if there's one of them, I mean, there's an action, right?
Yes. So these are more like a beta gamma system.
Yeah.
And it has a zero mode, which is this is the zero mode. So it doesn't annihilate the state.
It doesn't annihilate the vacuum.
No. No, it acts as a zero mode.
So is by zero holomorphic as a function of zero?
Yes, it has a constant mode. So phi zero is phi plus, and I'm just interested in this constant mode.
Yes, but then W is a holomorphic function. Phi zero is
only holomorphic. You're applying techniques of conformal field theory I do not want to apply. Just think of this as a path integral. I reduce it to the zero mode of the path integral. We know how to do that. Well, perhaps a bit dangerous to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first question.
So this is the beta gamma system.
This is a beta gamma system, right?
It has a zero mode. The zero mode is I'm keeping in the zero mode here. So just think of the path integral as an integral. In the end, the path integral will just be an integral over that zero mode. And this will act in that way.
I mean, you're changing the Bose C level with this on.
Exactly. That's a very, now we're getting a lot of machinery out, but yes. Yes. Well, perhaps we should discuss in private, because I don't think the discussion is leading anywhere. So this is in some way, in the simplest case, which is the Kony fault, which has one singularity, we came to the Gaussian model in this way. So the Kony fault, this is just x. We had a single singularity, and we get the Gaussian model. And as I tried to show to you, if you have this matrix model, just the Gaussian model, you can get this curve out. So we again ignore the u and v, which was x squared plus mu. And that was the. So now the question. So one of the questions is, so is there some way to get to see more of this full Calabi-Yau threefold geometry? And so one observation is that you can get that actually by not studying just these kind of brains, but studying brains and anti-brains in this topological context. So Kuhnmann has given a very nice representation of that, because his remark was that Juan was saying this morning, the only way anti-brains are distinguished is that they have an extra minus sign in their boundary state. So if you do brains and anti-brains, instead of doing a UN gate theory, you go to a UN plus / UN minus super matrix. Now, it's kind of difficult to think of these supermatrices. So one point is that these supermatrix models have been considered, and they were always kind of dismissed, because they were. It was observed that these were actually equivalent, where n is n plus minus n minus. And I already said that's easily to see perturbatively, because whenever you now have a hole in your Riemann surface, instead of getting trace of 1, you get a super trace of 1, which is n plus minus n minus. So obviously, these things have the same expansion as the ordinary matrix model. It only depends on the difference, n plus minus n minus. But there's a little bit more to be gained here, because if you analyze the model, so you want to analyze this model, and we have this matrix. It now has four components, four blocks. There are bosonic blocks here, phi plus and phi minus. And there are fermionic blocks over here. But now you want to put a gauge condition where these fermionic blocks are zero. So we want to reduce, essentially, break the symmetry to un plus cross un minus. So use the gauge symmetry of the odd components to put them to zero. So you want to expand around these configurations. But if you do that, so what you do by hand, you put kind of these odd components to zero. So we put some gauge condition. And you can do this very nicely using the language of ghosts. So in general, if you have some matrix with blocks, so here we put the off-diagonal blocks to zero. So the gauge condition is just kind of that give them a name, psi and psi dagger. So you put the condition psi dagger equal to zero, these fermionic components. And that means that there is a very simple, you get a very simple ghost for this. And the ghosts are, in general, also, of course, super matrices. But now you have ghosts which are traditionally called kind of A and B, which now only have kind of non-trivial components in these kind of off-block diagonal pieces. And remember, the ghosts have the opposite statistics, so A and B are bosons in this case. And there's also a very simple action that you get by just writing down this gauge condition. So the action that you get is the supertrace, essentially, of A phi B. And that's an extra term that you have to add to your action. So if you work this all out, and there's no reason to do this only for the Gaussian model, you can do this for the general matrix model with potential W, you find a very simple action. So the action then turns out to be trace of W phi zero phi plus minus W phi minus. So if you think again of the phi's as being eigenvalues in some potential W, these have kind of charge plus one, these have charge minus one. And then there are these kind of cubic terms, kind of this Yukawa-like terms, which if you write it out in components, there are two components to these A's and B's, minus Bi phi minus Ai. And this is the quiver model, kind of the A1 hat quiver model, in the sense we have phi plus and phi minus are two adjoints, and then the A's and the B's are bifundamentals. So here we have kind of n plus, and here we have n minus. Now in particular, if you take W to be quadratic, this is precisely the kind of the standard quiver matrix action that was, I guess, first written down by Witten and Klebanov, and then also used by Klebanov and Strassler. So it's a very, as a field theory, so it's a very interesting theory to study, in particular if you integrate out the phi plus and minus, then if you can do it very nicely by introducing kind of the meson operators, Ai, Bj, and if you kind of integrate out the action, so this S, action S, becomes just the determinant, the 2x2 determinant of this matrix M. So it's a quartic interaction in the A's and the B's. So in some sense now, if you do that, you are left with a very different model. So we did something very strange, right? You started with the matrix model phi, took it this gauge fixing condition, introduced extra bifundamentals, now get rid of phi. So in some sense, we transformed the original matrix phi into these matrices A and B. Yes. Yes. So a priori, this is just the same system, right? But you would say they would pair annihilate. Yeah, so the tachyons are these fields, which in this case they would be odd variables. These are, yes, because of this rule. So why is that? Because if you, they have like one boundary state here with a plus, and another boundary state with a minus. So the strings going from the brain to the anti-brain pick up an extra minus sign in the loops. But this is a reflection of this rule that you just represent the empty brain with a simple minus sign associated to the to every boundary component. Yeah. So what I did, I just by gauge. I know that by extending the gauge group, I can put these to zero, and I'm so kind of in a broken phase. And then I introduce ghosts. So in some sense, what happened with these odd components? They were fermionic, but they were pure gauge. And so in the end, by writing them in terms of the ghost, the off-diagonal terms are bosonic. So now, in some sense, these A's and B's look almost like the tachyon. Right. They're bosonic field connecting in the bifundamental representation.
The usual story of tachyon annihilation.
Yes, precisely.
So,
So I just started with this definition of the model. So in this topological context, anti-brains just get an extra minus sign for their boundary. Well, let me just take this model as a starting point, not go into that discussion. So this is the description of the model, and in some sense I think it, well, there's a very nice counterpart to this story, which is if you just do the ordinary matrix model, but now for instance with two cut solutions, so you put some eigenvalues here and here, then you have a similar story where the group UN breaks to kind of UN1 cross UN2. And so you would do everything the same, apart from that these sides are now bosonic. And you follow the same line, so only the A's and B's are now becoming fermionic. So you get the same quiver model, and that actually is a very nice description, because you can see directly that if these A's would now be odd, they give precisely the right kind of van der Monde factors to describe this broken vacuum. And there actually we know why they are odd, because there they are the honest ghosts that you also would get in the gate theory by doing gauge fixing. Right, so in that case, you would, for instance, in the four-dimensional gate theory, I have this matrix, it's just the adjoint, I gauge fix it, I get ghosts coming from this gauge fixing condition. No. So I'm saying also kind of Klebanov-Strassler, so you can make this n plus and n minus different. Right. So this is the model you get by having D3 brains and D5 brains. Anyhow, what I'm suggesting now, so in some sense we did nothing, but on the other hand, we have written a simple model, a Gaussian model, and much more complicated variables. But now there's enormous payoff, because this gives many more deformations. In fact, we know precisely what the deformations are, because they are the things now written in terms of the A's and the B's. So now there are operators O, let's all call them OKK, which are traces of these objects, these famous operators, which generate also, so these are precisely the things that generate the chiral ring of the corresponding four-dimensional n equals one gate theory, and also the ones which have been shown to generate the spectrum of chiral operators in the corresponding supergravity theory. So they're objects like this, and they transform in, according to the representation spin k over 2, k over 2, of this obviously SU2 cross SU2 symmetry that acts on these pairs of A's and B's. So these are precisely in one-to-one correspondence. There we go. Correspondence with the discrete states, with all the states in the C equals 1 model at R equals 1. So if you wish for a matrix model that computes arbitrary discrete states, this is a matrix model that does it. But it has a very rich spectrum. So can you boost it up to other values of R? You can. If you take R n times the self-dual radius and try to repeat this, basically by taking a Zn quotient, you get an A hat, what is it, 2n minus 1 quiver model.
You're saying the matrix model that does that now just determinants of Mij.
Plus this, so it's a quartic potential, I'm claiming, with arbitrary deformations of these are kind of these words that you can write in the A's and B's. For a few you can, but so I will come actually to that. There's a simpler model. So there are various models here, and it's a little bit confusing also to me, but I will comment on that. For instance, only tachyon perturbations. I will write a model in a moment for that. Yes?
Another question. So A and B are ghosts, right?
They started their life as ghosts, yes. Yes. Right. Well, it's the transformation, I guess, with Delphi. Since you gauge fixing these off diagonal things, so it's there are transformations of this type, I guess. I haven't thought about it. They better should be, of course. Yes. I haven't thought about their. Well, the ghost number is obviously zero, right? Because A and B are roughly the. No. I have to think about. Yeah. No, they definitely can. I will write some limit where it's clear how it's connected to other pictures. Yes, precisely. So let me say one thing, for instance, the tachyon. Yeah, I'll come to that for a moment. Just keep that question in mind, yes. Yes.
Is one phi? Is one matrix phi?
A supermatrix phi, yes.
One super?
Yes.
Yeah. But does it, how many A's and B's are there?
There are two A's and two B's.
Why?
Well, they're the usual kind of ghost B and C. The ghosts come in a pair. And they have two components here. So if you make this in an nth order, you get something like this, where the potential W should now kind of flip signs. So you have plus W, minus W, plus W, minus W. And actually, you can kind of decompactify the model too, if you want to. And you get this kind of infinite chain, so kind of an A infinity model. And actually, in some sense, that's one way, perhaps, to connect this model to the usual matrix quantum mechanics, because this hopping along this chain would be kind of this, we should be able to connect it somehow to the, perhaps in some way, to the discretized C equals one thing. But of course, this is very different, because this has all the discrete states in it explicitly. Well, clearly, it's something that one should investigate further. But I also want to present you another matrix model, which is closely connected to this, and also that's perhaps not widely appreciated. That was a very nice closed expression. So let me write another model. So suppose we only want to compute the tachyons, momenta. So we have these tachyons, say, at momentum positive k and negative, that I have been identifying with powers x to the k and y to the k in the conifold geometry uv plus xy equals mu. So again, the correspondence between that matrix model, at least the ingredients there and the coordinates, is that this matrix mij, which was aibj, as a 2x2 matrix, should be considered to be in some parameterization by these four variables. And then this is the corresponding, this is just the link of the ground ring and the conifold that I was mentioning before. So can you write down a matrix model that just computes the t's, k's, and t minus k's, apart from the original matrix quantum mechanics, which obviously was made to do this? So there's a beautiful model, which is called often called the normal matrix model, where normal stands for the fact that a matrix is called normal if it commutes with its Hermitian conjugate. But since we always work in this holomorphic context where basically everything is viewed as a chiral or contour integral, here we have just it's an ordinary two matrix model with matrices X and Y. So in some sense, X and Y are M11 and M22 in this thing over here. And so the really beautiful model is the following. It's just integral dx dy, exponent 1 over g string, trace xy, and then here you write just tk x to the k plus, well, I will introduce coupling constants tk for the positive tachyons, and let me call them tk tilde for the negative tachyons, tk tilde yk. No, so there are two points of view here. Either you assume that they commute, which is a little bit more in the spirit of this normal matrix model, or you do not. But then actually, the only way they are interacting is through this kind of simple XY term here. And then there's this famous Harisanda-Itzigsen-Zuber trick to still evaluate the integral. So it doesn't matter. You're free. So I prefer to think of it really as a two-matrix model. Don't put any restrictions on X and Y. It's equivalent. It can go to eigenvalues. And what you find is that you get just get a product over the eigenvalues of X, the eigenvalues of Y, and then a single Vandermonde of X and a single Vandermonde of Y. Because in the Itzigsen-Zuber trick, you get Vandermondes downstairs, and then here just get the whole thing in the eigenvalues. So xi tk xi to the k tk tilde yi to the k. So it's a very simple model, essentially two decoupled matrix models, and they only interact in this linear term. So since you also can think of it as a normal matrix model, this is a nice matrix model in the sense it has a common eigenvalue distribution, rho of x and y. So what is it? Well, there's a large literature on this. But roughly what you do is you do something like the following. You start by writing down a center saddle point equation. So the saddle point equations look something. So let's give a name to these potentials. Let this be W of X and this be W tilde of Y. If you look at the saddle point equations, they look something like this. If I the saddle point equations for X, well, you clearly get this term YI over here. And then, of course, the derivative of XI equals, and then on the other side, there will be a G string times XI minus XJ, J not equal to I. But now I invite you to think of this model again in some kind of natural, say, real slice where Y is X complex conjugate. And think of Cauchy's formula that the D bar of 1 over X is the delta, two-dimensional delta function of X and X bar. And just take the Y derivative of this whole thing. And you get 1 on one side. So you get 1 is equal to the sum of G string. So this looks a little bit sloppy, but you can make this really much more precise. Of, say, X minus XI, Y minus YI. So we have this common eigenvalue. And so what it just tells you is that, so this is just G string times rho of XY. This would be the two-dimensional eigenvalue density. So what you just find in the end, that this is rho equals 1. So in this case, you have a two-dimensional plane of eigenvalues. Yeah, so it's precisely, it's 1 or 0. And what you do is, these eigenvalues are still moving in a potential. And what you just, you fill up the potential till it's filled. I mean, till you have got rid of all the eigenvalues. So in the end, of course, you want that the integral of rho dx dy is n. And so that fixes the whole thing. So what you get is you get some blob in this two-dimensional phase. But we see you have kind of a constant eigenvalue density. So there's like an eigenvalue density dx dy, and actually it's kind of nice to write it as this over g string, where g string is h bar. So it really looks like the of a phase space, and just every eigenvalue occupies one unit of phase space. Now, how is this related to the usual model? Well, for instance, I mean, you can easily write this also. So forget about these interactions. Just this is very rigorous. There's a large literature. So, okay, so the yes. Yeah, so in general, what you do is you perturb this around, for instance, the t equals 0 or something, and then do small perturbations. Yeah, so there's a large literature on this. And the beautiful result is that in the end, you have this curve. And the curve, as a function of x, is given by an holomorphic function. So there's a theory relating deformations of analytic functions to these two matrix models. Well, this basically Wiegmann, many papers of Wiegmann and company, and actually they also apply this to the 2D quantum Hall fluid, for instance, because that's really this picture over here. And then you can recognize, in some sense, these objects here as the usual quantum Hall wave functions. So this has lots of applications. And also, it's very interesting to look at the shape of this thing as a dependence of the T's. And so what happens if you flow, this will kind of grow like fingers. And Wiegmann and company applied this to the study of oil in water, I think. That's typically kind of the condensed matter application. Yeah, so if you just take the Gaussian case here. Yeah, I guess you can, well, it doesn't matter because any quadratic expression in X and Y, because you're free to diagonalize them. Well, you can put the T's. Yeah, yeah, you can put some coordinates. They all holomorphic, so you write it as X squared plus Y squared in some coordinate. So, yeah, so if you... So the Gaussian, and this is kind of a nice picture. If you take some parameterization where this thing becomes Gaussian, so there's a clear definition if you have the Gaussian case. So it means just that this action of X and Y is quadratic. Remember, we're in the holomorphic context. Sorry? No, but you do it already up there in this action. Just an integral over two variables, two matrices, X and Y. And can they do linear transformations in X and Y, right? They again, so I'm very free about the integrals, the contour integrals that you integrate over. And let me just say a moment about it. But if you take Gaussian, then this will be a circle, an honest circle, and it will be now filled. And so the eigenvalue density, if you want to think it only of X, you integrate out of Y. Then you get just the usual semicircle. So you get somehow rho of X will be like this. And this is related to formulas I've been writing before. I've been writing equations like this, that dx, so I was saying that in a general Calabi-Yau, which is the form some curve of X and Y, we could write down periods. So the periods of the holomorphic 3 form could be written either as integrals dx dy in some slice where this f was positive, or then use a contour integral, write this as y dx. And so you can all do this manipulations on the level of matrices if you take this two matrix model. So what is the connection between this and the usual quantum mechanics? Well, I think in some sense that's still waiting to be kind of really good explained, but there was a very nice paper by Kazakov and Kostov and Alexandrov where they at least pointed out the following thing. So if you think about the Kony fold, and I always want to write this piece of it, and really think of it as a complex curve, it looks like this. Now in that curve there are these two natural cycles. So one cycle is kind of the A cycle, which is this compact cycle. And I somehow want to think of this as this kind of quantum Hall droplet. And this is this two matrix model. And then there is another cycle, which is this kind of non-compact cycle over here. And so this is kind of, so this is, if you wish, in the coordinates where y is x bar. Here, it's in the coordinates where x and y are kind of p plus or minus lambda in terms of the variables that Juan was using. So in some sense, you can think of this yellow line as the usual kind of Fermi level in the matrix quantum mechanics. And the red one as the two matrix model. And in some sense, these models are dual, and they're dual in a very precise sense. Namely, the variable mu in the two matrix model is given in the usual Hoeft fashion. So it's given by G string n. So this two matrix model you write down at fixed n. Well, the matrix quantum mechanics you write at fixed cosmological constant. So in that sense, these two models are dual. So now I want to turn... So in some sense, you will have a closed expression for these generating functions. And this is actually intimately connected to another closed expression, namely in the free Fermion language. So let me briefly say a few words about that, because that's a picture I want to kind of start to generalize. So, yes.
The normal matrix model.
Yes.
And the C equals 1 matrix model.
Yes.
How do you understand that? I mean, I
don't
see this picture here.
Yeah, so it's very confusing, because somehow this picture should only work at R equals 1 or something, right? Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting duality, because the duality that interchains the A and the B cycle, that's something I've been thinking a lot also what it means in the gate theory, for instance, because it's interchanging kind of the electric and the magnetic cycles. Right? So if you want to understand, for instance, S-duality in four-dimensional gate theories, it means on the Seiberg-Witten curve you want to interchange A and B cycles.
But is this duality an
S-duality? Yes.
But can we see what it does to the coupling?
Well, it's, if you would apply this to four-dimensional gate theory, which we, from this moment, it's not kind of my frame of mind, but the same question comes up there, right? So you write a Riemann surface, you write cycles. There's always this preferred set of cycles, which were the singularities blown up by putting in their quantum eigenvalues. But there are the B cycles, which are, we know its periods will compute masses of magnetic monopoles. So how can you go from one to the other? Yes. Yeah, so the matrix quantum mechanics with fixed mu has a value n. So there's the expectation value of the number of, and that's given by a nice formula. Now, namely, let me write it in a suggestive formula as the integral y dx around the B cycle. So in some sense, that's the df of the quantum mechanics d mu. On the other side is the normal matrix model. That works with fixed n. And then there's expression, say, for the expected cosmological constant or something, which is the integral of y dx over the A cycle. So it's df dn in some sense. And the statement is that they are the same. But so in some sense, the transformation going for here is like a Legendre transform.
Okay, so that's the thing. So that F1 again,
yes.
F normal.
Yes.
I mean, what kind of problem about the same
for R? Right. But you somehow see it geometrically already here in a rather obvious way. But indeed, it's the same solution. And it's the same solution of this total hierarchy that I will now mention, that you and I studied. Right, at the self-dual radius, yes. And it's very interesting to think about this generalizations to arbitrary. Sorry? Well, naively you work with the... In some sense, you work in some, you turn on some couplings of the tachyons to try to write it as x, y to the n. But I don't think that's actually very clean to go to other values of the radius. It's non-trivial. There's non-trivial structure there. So now I want to say something about free fermions. So again, I have this picture that Juan was sketching. So in the kind of Liouville time description, there are kind of these free fermions that at far away we can think of as incoming and outcoming, and we're computing their reflection coefficient. So in some sense, the coordinate that I've been calling x, which was we can identify with e to the x, I x0, and the coordinate y, say plus or plus phi, we can identify with minus I x0. So this is, of course, only asymptotically. So we are in this regime here, where we don't see the influence at all of the wall. And then we have fermions. So I want to write, consider now an S matrix. So the whole thing that the C equals 1 model is doing is producing first an S matrix from a Fock space H into H, where we can think H as being the Fock space either of a free boson, so we have this boson field with mode expansions, and we have the corresponding fermions, psi and psi dagger. And what you get is a very nice, so in some sense, the whole solution of the model is just giving the reflection coefficients for these fermions. So fermion mode psi p gets reflected. So if you just compute this, you get some reflection factor rp psi p. And there's a nice formula for rp. Let me write down the formula just at the self. So p here is in general n plus 1 half over r, where r is the radius on which you compactify, but I'll pick that to be 1. So this is the usual Neve-Schwarz boundary condition for the fermion around the direction x0. And then there is a refraction coefficient, so this r n plus 1 plus 1 half. So this was computed by Greg and company and many others, I think. So up to some trivial factors, it's there's some sine here. Let me try to do this. So this, it's the same sines and gamma functions we have seen before. So there's a sine in this notation, n plus 1 plus mu. Here, everything in the end I want to consider as analytic functions. So I replace the usual mu by an imaginary one to write this in a nice formula. And then there's a gamma function of n plus mu plus 1. So this is the reflection coefficient of the fermion. So how can we think of this answer? So let me make one claim, and I'll substantiate it in a moment. So the claim is, S is just Fourier transform. So what do I mean by that? Yes. For this claim that it's Fourier transform? Well, it's valid for any holomorphic value of mu. I mean, in this complex geometry, it's all holomorphic in mu. So in fact, one way to write this is the following. So I can write, so let's call this the transformed psi. So we have a psi in and psi out. So the transformed psi as an operator. So let me write some notation. So I want to think of this geometry. So we're now in the complex world. We have this geometry x, y equals mu. So I want to think of the variable y as mu over x. So I'm drawing some pictures that go with this story, kind of the topological geometrical interpretation. So this curve I want to think of as being two planes, kind of the x plane and the y plane, connected with a little tube, kind of whose circumference is mu. So the usual way to do this is you use kind of this plane. So this is valid kind of for x large, right? So x large, you use the x coordinate, y is small. And this little piece here, if you want to think about this, the region where x is very small, you kind of zoom out and make it into y. So particularly, the point y equals infinity here corresponds to x equals 0. So somehow we have these two regions. So another way to think about it is just as a two-sphere, where here we have the point, say, x equals infinity, and here we have the point y equals infinity. So using, and again, this you can also want to draw, you just, it's a conformal field theory, you can pick any metric. This is the usual picture of this, the cylinder diagram, and we have in and out states. And I want to think of the S matrix connecting these in and the out states. So x is the right variable to consider these fields in this, around this region, and y is the correct variable to consider the strings, the states in that other region. So now I want to write the following formula. Psi tilde as a function of y, so this is the reflected fermion, can be written as follows. Basically, because of this gamma function, it's some Laplace transform, and then you can pick a nice way to deform the contour and write it as follows. E to the xy psi of x. So let me write it a little bit more suggestive. If I redefine psi as with an extra factor of x to the mu, and do the same thing for psi tilde of y, and we just, in a moment, I will give interpretation of this formula, then with these new variables, the equality is just Fourier transform. So this is, in some sense, the only thing this S matrix is doing. So how does this connect to the geometrical picture? Well, what is this? So this is, in some sense, the picture in terms of fermions, or another way to say it is in terms of brains. But how do you think of it in terms of deforming the complex curve? So there's another way, as I said yesterday, so you include these coherent states. Coherent states of the bosons, and then you can write the partition function, kind of the generating function, z, as a map t tilde s t. Now remember, this matrix S, if you write it in terms of this, the only thing it's doing is multiplying the fermions by a phase. So if you think of it acting in a fermion basis, it's just a linear map. Well, that's just clearly from all these formulas. The matrix S is a linear map in terms of the fermions. So one way to say that, that in the usual language of integrable hierarchies, this matrix S is an element of GL infinity, which just is the matrix acting on this free fermion basis. And so by kind of by definition, this thing is a solution of what's called the two-toda hierarchy. But we want to understand that solution now in terms, connect this to the geometry. So what is the connection to the geometry? Well, I basically gave it to you yesterday. So what I want to do is I want to say I'll have this curve. Yes? Well, again, so if you, write Tn as 1 over n, say, z to the n, or z to the minus n or something, this is the vertex operator that creates one fermion. Actually, it's the vertex operator of the fermion minus the fermion charge. Right? So if you write a vertex operator for a fermion, you also shift the Fermi level, or the, just the but so if you use this particular representations for the Tn's, then the state T, it's just a fermion, I think, at z, acting on, well, something like psi dagger at zero, something like this. So a state with net fermion charge. This is just the usual correspondence. Is that clear?
So it's just the phase you
wrote. Right. So in the fermion basis, it just multiplies the fermions with this phase. And if you redefine the fermions in this fashion, it's just the Fourier transform. But on the bosons, it's a very complicated transformation.
Now, were you going to give a geometrical ID and why you would
expect? Yes. I'm not going to do that. So because I want to say, well, how does this boson appear? So the way I said the boson appeared, naturally from deforming the complex curve, is changing this equation in this way. And I said there's a similar way in which we can think of the boson at y as deforming the equation of x as a function of y. Remember, this should be a holomorphic curve, minus dy phi tilde. And if you shift, so if you now shift phi to phi minus mu log x, and this phi tilde as phi tilde plus mu log x, log y, sorry, which are the transformations, by the way, that if you use the usual boson-fermion correspondence, correspond precisely to these shifts over here. So we're just shifting with some coherent state of the bosons. Then these two equations here become just the equations y is dx phi, and x is minus dy phi tilde. But we know what that means. That just means that phi and phi tilde are Legendre transforms. So we see that this e to the phi has kind of a fascinating property. So it means that if you think just kind of semi-classically of this wave function, now I'm putting a factor of g string in here. So this is psi of x. If you think what this is, well, so now I want to kind of propose the following picture. So here we have this geometry. We have the x-plane, we have the y-plane. We think of writing down this object, which kind of creates a brain at position x. And what I'm doing the following thing. I'm just saying, well, suppose I kind of move it over here and write the same object now in the local coordinate y. what would it do? But the important thing, and always in the back of our mind, should of course be that certainly from the geometrical point of view, this is natural kind of two-form dx dy kind of lurking around. So somehow x and y are canonically conjugate variables. So I'm just saying here that this phi of x, we see this directly here from these equations. And you see this has nothing to do in some sense with the geometry. You just have to see this scalar field phi, which parameterizes deformations of the complex structure, by definition, since it just changes the form of this curve. You have the curve of x and y, and you're changing the shape of this curve. If phi has that role, then by definition, under coordinate transformation from x to y, it transforms under Legendre transform, at least in the classical limit. So the question is, what is the quantum version? Well, here we see it, because we have the answer. So what is the answer? Well, Fourier transform. What is the natural quantum version of Legendre transform? It's Fourier transform. So we see that the full G-string answer is that e to the phi tilde of y over G-string is dx e to the xy plus or minus is minus phi of x over G-string. That this should be the way in which this field transforms. So I want to kind of draw a lesson from this. I'm not quite sure what the interpretation for this, but the lesson, but I think in some sense should be obvious because we started doing matrix quantum mechanics. But the lesson I want to think of, if you think of the one-point function of a brain, this should be some geometrical object living on this. So in general, I want to propose now the following picture. We have some Riemann surface sigma. It's sitting inside this xy space with natural symplectic form dx dy. This is the complexified Fermi surface. Now we put a brain on that picture in some position x. Now naively I would have thought that this brain, being a fermion, it's a fermion living in this brain, so this would transform like a spin 1/2 field. And in fact, that is a very natural picture to do. We could say, well, you have, you know, this, we have some local coordinate x here, you have another local coordinate y here. But you could move the brain over here. And if you want to know how the object is written in terms of the coordinate y, well, you know there's an obvious ansatz for how it would transform. Namely, it would just transform under so you would expect that psi of y, give it a tilde, is psi of x, where x is now a function of y, times dx dy to the 1/2, because it's a spin 1/2 field. So let's see how this property indeed is recovered from that more complicated transformation law that I'm writing over here. You see, what I want to think of, I want to think of this psi of x as a wave function now. And if I write psi of x as e to the phi x over g string, I want to think of that somehow as the WQB approximation. So this plus 1 plus order g string as the WQB approximation. And so in some sense, the physical fermions are in this piece. They are kind of this would be the piece that we get by just shifting, making this geometry in this case at finite mu, so putting some background in the geometry. This would be the quantum piece of the wave function. And indeed, if you do the small fluctuations, you'll find it, and that's something we all in some sense know very well, that strictly speaking, wave functions in quantum mechanics are half differentials. Right? So we know they transform with these determinant factors. And so that's just the thing that if you somehow take this to be constant of x, or take the approximation, this is a very slow variation in x. You do this Fourier transform in this general way, you find this transformation property. But in general, I'm claiming we should think of psi of x as a wave function. And that means that it transforms very non-linearly, and it transforms linearly, but very non-trivially on the coordinate transformation. So is this just a silly property of the sequence one? Yes. Yeah. So in some sense, I'm saying this: if psi of x, think of it as a one-point function of grade. If it really would, of course, be so. If we have some Hamiltonian. So let's do the following thing. I think, and that's actually some sense to understand it. We had this function f of x of y equals 0, which was the Fermi surface. Now think of this as a Hamiltonian, as an actual honest Hamiltonian. So in this case, it was xy minus mu. But now think really as y as ddx, or g string times ddx. Suppose that my wave function satisfied, so perhaps I should call this h to make it a little bit more suggestive. Suppose I really solve the equation h psi equals 0. Then obviously the geometric symmetry interchange in x and y in the Hamiltonian would be implemented in changing momentum and position space. And so surely a wave function, we know how a wave function transforms if you go from momentum to position space, would be Fourier transform. In general, can do any certainly linear canonical transformations. So an observation that, so now here I want to connect to a very different idea. So let's so I'll just be very sketchy. So there's a very beautiful paper by Aganagic, Clem, Marino, and Vafa, who have suggested a kind of a huge generalization of this story. I mean, they made a very beautiful observation about general Calabi-Yau manifolds, actually toric Calabi-Yau manifolds. So in two lines, what they observed is the following. So they looked at manifolds which are toric. So there were many Calabi-Yau manifolds which were, say, fibered by three tori. And if you do that, at some points, these tori can become singular. And they looked at the special case where you don't actually have a full T. So they looked at the case where the Calabi-Yau threefold itself was toric, so had a torus action. But in this case, has a T2 torus action. So there's a natural vibration by this T2. And you can look when becomes this vibration singular. So look at the singularities. You'll see that all this geometric information is encoded in a graph, actually a planar graph. And this planar graph, in some sense, indicates, well, it indicates two things. It indicates the position at which this two torus degenerates. So what you will have is you will have a two torus, and there will be some cycle on the two torus that will shrink to zero. But you can have many of these cycles. In fact, they are labeled by kind of two relatively prime integers, p and q. So somehow the angle of this in this diagram, so each line segment corresponds to such a singularity, and the angle is corresponding, basically it's picking out the particular two cycle that is shrinking. So there's a large class of Calabi-Yaus that you can kind of think of in terms of these diagrams. They not necessarily have to be tree-level diagrams. And then you can ask, can you solve the topological string on these models? So they made the following observation. If you do the A model, where you sum over instantons, then these instantons, there's a beautiful mathematical technique using the action of the two torus to say that these instantons, so you map the string into this, that the string will basically be kind of mapped to these fixed lines, so to the graph. And that means that somehow the real sheet instantons will be kind of hugging these graphs. And what you now can do is you can kind of say, well, let's try to cut one of these world sheet instantons. And how do you do that? Well, you do that by putting d-brains here. So if you put d-brains in that thing, you will literally cut the string world sheet diagrams. And what you then can see is that in some sense, so you want to, this is all made much more precise using this mathematical technique of localization. That you somehow can build up the closed string world sheet instantons by these kind of open string instantons. But then you see that all the interesting details essentially in the vertex. So what this all boils down to, that there are gluing laws of a topological string. For in this case, you need two ingredients. You need this vertex. And you should know how to kind of, if you have two of these vertices, how to glue them together. In fact, all of this should be a general property of topological strings, so it's also be held in the B model. So there's a B model version of this. And so in the B model, so here you use mirror symmetry. What happens is that these graphs, like this, think of them as Feynman diagrams of particles, they move into, become kind of string diagrams, they kind of blow up. They become little pieces of a Riemann surface. A Riemann surface given by an equation H of U and V, and the Calabi-Yau locally looks like something that I would like to write now, let's call it WZ plus this equation H of U and V equals zero. Where the so I'm using their coordinates U and V different, yet that should definitely be distinguished, yeah. So perhaps I should have given them another name, I won't. The important thing is that these E to the U and E to the V, in this case, because you have this mirror symmetry, you have some circle somewhere, they are now not complex variables, but they are basically C star variables, that is to say, there's a periodicity, U going to U plus 2 pi I, and V going to V plus 2 pi I. So, in this picture, there is a kind of a small variation on the thing that we have been studying in the C equals 1 string, in the sense that our phase space is now not a plane, but it's like a torus, a complex torus. So we always have thinking in this phase space X and Y. So now we have something which looks more like a torus. Yes. No. Right. So the symplectic form, that's the important thing, is du dv. So it's a curve somehow in this kind of toric space. So it's more better thought about a C star cross C star. And you can write many examples. And in fact, the simplest example of such a curve is the one which corresponds to this vertex. So they write the curve that corresponds to the vertex is the Hamiltonian, say, if I already call it. So really, now feel free to think of this at a Hamiltonian or a Fermi level. E to the U plus E to the minus V minus 1. One way to think about, or if you want to think about this curve, for instance, you can think in other variables, in our original variables, if e to the u x, you can think of this as a sphere with three kind of singularities, one at x equals 0, one at x equals 1, and one at x equals infinity. So it's in basically in all respects, it's the analog of the C equals 1 string, now not with two, but with three punctures. And as I've said previously in my lecture, the kind of the case with one puncture is case basically the case of the minimal models. So that actually is the where you get KP hierarchy. So here you have to do, so it's better to draw this as a, in this picture over here, so this vertex corresponds again to a piece of Calabi-Yau, but now of a Riemann surface of this kind, which is like a Fermi surface with three asymptotic ends. So they make the observation that you can now look at the small fluctuations. So you can try to repeat everything I've said here in this case. So you have, say, a local coordinate u here, a v here, and w here, where w is basically minus u minus v. And you write equations of the following type. So you say v is some function of some scalar field phi of u, and then this repeats itself cyclically. So there are now three scalar fields, say phi, phi tilde, if I had or something. There are three ones. And so you have three sets of time. So in the end, to this you will associate some partition function z. Well, which is better right now like this. We have the variables, say the local variables tk in the u coordinates, the tks in the v coordinates, and the tks in the w coordinates. And the thing that's now there is not a state, as it was for one puncture, or a matrix, what it was for the sequence one, but now really an object, say V, in the triple tensor product. There's a V in the triple tensor product. That is in many ways should be comparable to the usual kind of string field theory pairs of bands, triple vertex, the usual cubic vertex. So the question now is, how can we kind of give a definition, a good definition of this vertex V? Well, this is very much work in progress, but I mean, one thing which, let me just give you a few hints, what we seem to be defined. So we have now this picture over here. And the question again is, if you put a brain at position U, and you want to move it to the position V, how do you do this? Well, I now kind of take a deep leap. I say, well, I know what I have to do. Putting brains, or if you wish, putting fermions, I can always switch from bosons to fermions. And this is, I basically have a free boson parameterizing the deformations of my curve. I can make local excitations of the boson, which I can then fermionize. So I have fermions living on these three ends. So I can put the fermion operator psi of U here and ask, what is it in this language over there? So I have to find the right canonical transformations to do this. So one very cute fact is, there's an obvious guess for a canonical transformation. So let me say one thing. So usually you would have, what are the linear coordinate canonical transformations? Well, this would be the group SP2. We know that very well from, and the thing that we're of course looking is the, well, that will act in the previous case, on the two phase space variables x and y. And we know that we have to find the representation of that in the Heisenberg algebra, where x and y are now given, are non-commuting. And that's the obvious, so that's what's usually called the metaplectic representation. It's an infinite cover of this group. And we know a double cover in general. A double cover is good enough because essentially these fermions were spin 1/2. And actually, of course, SP2 is just SL2. But here, they're acting on U and V, which are these torus variables. So in here we have only an action of SL2Z, which has, of course, two generators, S and T. So you can just think, how are S and T implemented? So there's a natural action of SL2Z on wave functions. And actually, S is... just think of, just restrict to the integers. So there's now a natural action on wave function. S is still Fourier transform. Yes. Yes. So this is the action of S. And actually the action of T, if you think about it, just multiplication by Gaussian in general. And it, well, you have two T's. You have the T shifting A plus A plus B or B plus A. So the T I want actually here is the integral du exponent of, it's just multiplication with the Gaussian. So T of psi of u is just e to the u squared over g string times psi of u. And now there's an obvious transformation, st, which cubes to 1. So I'm claiming it is this transformation st that relates these two vertices. So there's a very, a prescription essentially, that we can kind of connect the correlation functions of these fermions using this quantum implementation of these transformations. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, yes, precisely. That is this extra phase that you get. Well, it's getting a little bit a long story, so I will stop here because there are many things. But let me just give you one really, what I find a very impressive. So is there a matrix model? That's a good question. In some sense, it should be a three-matrix model, I guess. But let me give you one claim. So one thing you can compute in this model, which is a little bit different from the sequence one, you can just put one brain at position u. So this is the expectation value of a single fermion, which is non-zero. So this corresponds to having a brain and just computing arbitrary genus g instanton corrections to the single brain. And this has been computed, for instance, in localization or something. And it has a very nice formula, So usually it's written as follows. Sum over n greater than 0, 1 over n e to the nu. And then here are the string corrections, n times, no, sorry, 2 times sinh n g string over 2. So if you compute the disk instantons, so the disks give this thing which is sums up to the Dai logarithm. So this is the leading contribution, but then there are order p string squared. Well, this is just, if you wish, you just take this complete, yeah, you can do it like that, precisely. But that in some sense, it's even simpler. You can just do it, and basically one brain inside this geometry will do it. So it's really the local contribution. It's if you have a holomorphic disk somewhere, you map, so this is the kind of, these are the maps where this whole thing gets mapped to a fixed disk in space-time. So just you can map the whole genus on this. So it's a rather intimidating formula, which, by the way, can be written much nicer if you write it in terms of exponential. So you can write it also like this, e to the u, e to the n times g string. And so the question is, how this? How can you get such a wave function out of this geometry? So remember that, and say this in this case, the Hamiltonian, generalizing the Kony fold, say, should be this Hamiltonian over here. So it's a little bit strange, right? U and V are like position and momentum, so it's not quadratic in the momenta. But it's kind of fun to just try to solve this equation. And you see what this equation does. It's not very difficult, because the first term multiplies by U. And the second term shifts, so this is a wave function, say, of U. The second thing, shift u plus g string. And then there's just a constant. And indeed, if you look at this infinite product expansion, you will notice that this function has precisely the property. So for instance, this one-point function of this brain indeed solves that Schrödinger equation. And so one thing that you can check, which is very non-trivial, if you move this thing to here, you have to apply this transformation ST on the psi. And indeed, it's known in the literature on these guys. So this thing is usually sometimes called the quantum Dai logarithm. But this indeed has a beautiful functional property that's invariant under this function. So this seemed to this you can kind of boost up. So these are other examples where this seemed to work. It's not at all clear to which extent this will work in all generality, but to give one more. Yes, this is just the simplest one. Yes, yes. But in general, it fits in this general picture. So a big question is here. I mean, okay, so if you have a geometry, in this case given by some Hamiltonian, should we solve? I mean. Should we study the quantum mechanics of this Hamiltonian, and is there some conceptual way to understand why the wave functions of that Hamiltonian are the brains? Because that seemed to be a story which, of course, in some sense is kind of tautological, I guess, for this sequence. It's basically trying to explain why it was a phase space and why somehow get quantum mechanics out. So one last example, just to whet your appetite. If you go back all the way down to the most simple model, which actually is the so-called 2,1 model coupled to gravity. So in terms, that's again a double scaling limit of a matrix model, which is given by the equation y squared equal to x. So we can try to do that Hamiltonian. We get dx squared plus x on psi equals 0. This in that that's a model which has been kind of beaten to death in first ways to look at it, but it's clearly related to this KdV hierarchy. This is the Lux operator of the KdV hierarchy. This thing is then called the Baker-Arcueso function, and so this function is a well-known solution that actually is given by the Airy function. So this would be the one-point function of the brain, and then you can take a following step, So I'm now also claiming that if you know this, what about n of these brains? Say at position x1, xn. Well, you can say something. Well, this, what I'm just writing down here, is kind of the world volume theory of that brain. Just boost it, make it into a matrix. And so you get an action, an n by n matrix model, not large n, it could be 2 or 3, of e to the trace xy plus y cubed over 2. So these are typical Consavius matrix models. Those of you who are not familiar with that, it's like a matrix model in external field. But in some sense, it's just what it's doing is it's promoting the wave functions of your quantum mechanical problem to this matrix. And so another question is, can you do this in general? Is this work in general? So can you make a list where this works? Well, I think quite impressive is, for instance, it certainly works for the Gaussian model, works for the Kony fault. Question is, does it work for this vertex or something? But there seem to be now, and that's perhaps the last thing that I want to say, there are kind of two ways. So I would now want to say the following kind of picture arising. You start from some geometry, okay, given by some Hamiltonian H. Then there are two things. So we start from this Fermi surface. There are two things to do. So one, we kind of deform the surface. But then we have to think very hard what does it mean in terms of all the closed, this is kind of the closed string picture. What does it mean by including all the closed string loops? Well, you have to somehow do a quantum deformation. But it's not, I mean, it, as we've seen, in terms trying to write even the sequence one in terms of this boson is a good case. So there's another case, but just kind of add brains. And you can add n of them. And then perhaps you get an n of n by n matrix model, which should be really distinguished from these large n matrix models that I started my lecture series with. These are very different. So if you this is just a finite number of brains, and then I would say that well, these two descriptions are clearly holographically related, because here I have a set of brains with some world sheet theory, world volume theory, just an n by n matrix. It's equivalent to deforming the geometry in terms of the closed string picture. So in some sense, I think many of these observations that we made also for lower dimensional strings, they fit very nicely into this picture. But there is this kind of enormous generalization lurking there with in terms of these vertices. And I should say something important. So why is it interesting to study, for instance, that vertex? Well, the beautiful thing is that, as I said, Calabi-Yau's can be made by gluing these things together. So if you understand this picture really well, you can connect things just by stringing surfaces together, which looks very weird, because it looks like you're somehow looking, well, at the wave function of a Hamiltonian, and you want to kind of glue the wave function. Yes.
So there are
non-compact Calabi-Yaus. Yes. So if you want to go to compact cases, actually, well, there's a very few things that you have to add, but this would be part of the story of also for compact cases. And so this suggests that there is some way in which we can, at least in this kind of topological world or holomorphic world, this kind of very safe world where far away from the honest physics, that this closed string theory can really have some locality properties. You can glue it together. So the question, what are the axioms of this? It seemed to be some quantum version of conformal field theory. I have no idea what it is, but I think it's pointing to a very rich structure. So before I finish, I want to say one other word, because I think this is also the last lecture of the workshop, the math physics workshop we had, which I enjoyed tremendously. And I want to thank, I think on behalf of the other organizers, also the KATP and certainly David here as a representative of that, for allowing us to have this meeting. It was really, I think, very fruitful in many respects. So thanks for that. Yes.
Now, these are brains, B, topological type brains.
Yes. Yes.
So, is this algebra the algebra of BDSX?
Very interesting point. Yeah, so one thing, for instance, what's, what might be helpful for you, if you, you have this algebra satisfies kind of usual cutting relations, right? You can cut it like here and here. So it's very much like a conformal field theory. For instance, doing this way, old-fashioned ST duality. So if this diagram with four punctures correspond to this kind of resolved conifold. So this is this local P1. And that can go through a flop transition. And the flop transition is precisely basically going from here to here. So the fact that this is kind of the same story means that you can kind of go. So there is some kind of some associativity, but more like associativity with a modulus, like the four-point function. So I really want to think of this thing also. Of course, it depends on the choice of the local coordinates at the three punctures. So this vertex is really like a chiral vertex operator in conformal field theory. It depends on three sets of local coordinates.
Okay. I mean, that's all interesting. I don't think that addresses my question. I mean, you know that there's an algebra of BPS space.
Right.
Colliding.
Sure. Yes.
There is, you can formalize that in terms of correspondence variety.
Yes. Yes. Is this the same thing? Right. Take a K3 or something, yeah. Yes. Yes. Right. Yes.
Correspondence variety, whether they're related by an x-axis.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah, perhaps one way to approach this is to think of this vertex tensor just say a K3 or something, or just yeah. Yes. Yes. Right. Well, certainly at some limit, this is the usual algebra of a chiral boson. So that's very close, but then somehow it has g-string corrections to that. Yes. So in the limit where this phi field is very small, then this becomes just the standard scalar field, and then this becomes the standard three-point function in the conformal field theory of that scalar field. Yes. Right, so that is a very nice picture because you see. Well, there are two pictures. So first of all, if you think about the wave function, right, you do it in this variable u, but you still have the variable v. So you can do transformations where you shift v by v plus u. And this is precisely this transformation t that I was writing down. So you can the full fermion wave function, or so the full vertex, will act just with this operator t. So what is t? Well, it's multiplication by Gaussian. And if you write it in a fermion language as a bilinear operator, well, I either have to. So in this case, I think a Gaussian terms of v. So it's more natural to write this as an operator d du squared. Oh, sorry, this is the second quantized operator that implements that transformation. And now you can bosonize this field, and then you get d phi cubed. So actually, acting with the integral of d phi cubed, that's the thing that changes. And there's a nice observation that this indeed is what you expect from the boson, because remember, we write equations u is d phi vi and v is du phi. So shifting v with u is just shifting. So it means that, yeah, so this transformation means that you're shifting the variable v essentially with an object which is now field dependent. So you can think of this as a field-dependent coordinate transformation. And the usual way in which you compute a coordinate transformation is write the vector field, which is in this case dvy, times the stress tensor, which is dvy squared. So you can see it's a cubic operator acting on it. And these operators have been everywhere. Another way to write this in terms of, there's a very nice connection with just basically the second Casimir operator. That appears. So the framing ambiguity in Trans-Simon theory is related to the second Casimir. It connects in this way. But in general, I would say there's just this action of SL2Z, which is very naturally acting on that Hilbert space, in a fermion Hilbert space, implemented by these canonical transformations, lifted to quantum operators.